Thank you for joining us. This is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter at Fisheries Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast, or support the podcast on Patreon or Teespring if you feel inclined. Our guest today is Herman Vonnegut. Herman is a Dutch aquatic ecologist and entrepreneur specializing in fish migration and water management. He is recognized internationally for his work promoting the maintenance and recovery of free-flowing rivers by raising global awareness of rivers and migratory fish through the biennial event World Fish Migration Day, of which he is the founder and creative director. He is also the initiator of Dam Removal Europe and Dam Removal Global. Welcome to the podcast, Herman.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm happy to be in this podcast, the first podcast I've been in.
Well, we brought you on to highlight the upcoming World Fish Migration Day, but let's first learn a little bit more about Herman. What inspired you to begin a career with fish?
Yeah, I think that goes way back in history. I almost turned 50 in a couple of days, and I think it was maybe 44 years ago when I was six. My mother and my brothers took me to a river. We caught fish, we ate the fish, and that's where I think my love for rivers and fish started. And I'm from the north of the Netherlands and lived on a farm. And yeah, water was important for us, and also clean water for irrigation. And so I learned how to deal with water, and also learned about what lives under the water and to catch fish. And I started a study in when I was 19, environmental chemistry. And later on, I studied biology, and from there, I moved on into a career dealing with aquatic ecology and rivers and clean lakes. And so that's what happened a couple of years ago.
So what was your first job in aquatics or fisheries?
I worked at a regional water authority in the north of the Netherlands, and they were responsible for the sewer plantations and water quality in the region for small rivers and ditches and lakes. And that's where I had to write reports about water quality and had to come up with advice to improve water quality. That was my first job around 1995. And from there, I moved into another water authority. And in 2007, I started a private consultant on the topic of fish migration and river connectivity. And in 2014, I started the World Fish Migration Foundation because I really felt that there was something missing on this topic, and especially on the awareness side.
And we'll get back to that in just a second, but almost all of our episodes so far have focused on North American research or work. How is fisheries or aquatic ecology different across the pond over in Europe?
I have to say that you have a long history in the U.S. When it comes down to fisheries. The American Fisheries Society, for example, has an anniversary of 150 years. We don't have something like that in Europe. I think you take care of your fisheries really well. And in Europe, we lost a bit that feeling. We lost the feeling of how it is to have rivers full of fish, and we just don't know anymore what that is. People have forgotten because we have so many obstacles and barriers in our water that the fish can't reach their spawning grounds anymore. And it's the same for the fishery scientists. There are a lot, but there's not a real like European vibe to restore rivers. And it's just starting now.
So you mentioned that eventually you went the private route and started your own consulting firm. What led to that decision? What made you go your own route?
At that point, I was working for a regional water authority, and the total surface of this water authority was around 200,000 hectare. That's the Dutch word for hectare. I don't know what that's in US numbers, but it was rather small. And I felt that this topic with migratory fish was an international topic and a national, international topic, because these fish migrate across borders. And the regional water authority I was working for, we had a lot of fish species that came from other other regions, also from the sea. And so that made me think, if I want to help these fish, I should work on a national and international level to help them.
Then, nearly a decade after going out on your own, you founded the World Fish Migration Foundation. Was this kind of along those same lines of you just wanted to continue helping these migratory fishes?
When I started the foundation, I really felt that the move from being a consultant to a foundation improved the way that I could awareness on the topic of migratory fish on a more global scale. But not only on a global scale, but also on a regional scale, but to connect it from regional to local and then to global eventually. And with the foundation, I had more options to raise funds, subsidy programs, and so it helped me to scale this model up. What's really important, I think, is the fact that this foundation is supported from the start by the Nature Conservancy and WWF and a lot of other organizations, but especially those two are, I see them as the founding fathers of this foundation, and I'm really proud to work with them. I'm really proud that they supported and support us still. And I think there are many more sponsors that I'm forgetting at the moment, but you can find them on our website. But it's really important that all these people and organizations that support us, that that makes this thing happen. And that's what I wanted to say as well.
You've kind of hinted at it in some of your answers, but what are some of the issues facing migratory fishes?
Yeah, one of the most important things are the obstacles, so the barriers, the weirs, the dams, the pumping stations, because they block the routes of these fish, and in this way these fish cannot get to their spawning grounds and grow up again. And the other thing is water quality. So if the water is polluted, then these fish have a problem. And another problem is the fisheries, for example. If the fisheries are too intensive, then these fish have a problem as well. But the main problem are the barriers. If the water doesn't flow and the rivers are blocked, then these fish don't have a way to go. And so that should be solved first.
And so how does the World Fish Migration Foundation help with mitigating or correcting some of these issues?
Yeah, by making people aware, and not only people, also policymakers, and being part of research projects where we show what can be done about the problems, by showing other people and people in our network the success stories from other countries. Like, for example, there's a story about a dam removal project in the Estonia, which is really a showcase for other countries. So we are helping people in Estonia to showcase that project in other countries. And so that's the way we work. We highlight good projects and inspire others to do the same.
And one of the ways that you highlight or bring awareness to some of these issues and projects is the biennial World Fish Migration Day. And it's coming up just around the bend. So when is World Fish Migration Day, and what exactly is it?
The next one is on the 24th of October, and in a normal year without Corona, World Fish Migration Day always takes place in May, and it's a one-day event where people around the world show migratory fish, show other people what is being done to help these fish, do outreach campaigns, taking kids out into the field, show fish, opening up fishways officially. So it can be all kinds of events that show the importance of these migratory fish and these healthy rivers. And we started in 2014, but actually, to be honest, we started in 2001 at that regional water authority where I was talking about, with a one-day event. In one afternoon, we had 1,000 visitors for a migratory fish day. And that inspired me to like scale that model up to the Netherlands. And then later on, it went to a more North Sea event. And then in 2014, I thought, if this really works well, why not make it a global event? And so that's how it started in 2014. And since then, we are growing every year we organize it.
Now, what kind of activities do participants do during World Fish Migration Day? You mentioned it's a global thing. But what kind of different activities have been registered through the foundation?
Yeah, so this year it's more digital events like webinars and meetings that show the importance of these fish or highlight certain results from studies, and also involving school kids in classrooms. But in the years before Corona, we had a lot of activities outside. So opening up fishways, so water managers that opened up fishways, or river keeper groups that did 4 miles run for fish, for example. So all kinds of activities that show the importance of these fish and the importance of free-flowing rivers. So in Africa, we had an event, it was in 2014, where there was a protest march in, I think it was Tanzania, and thousands of people were protesting to get more healthy fish. And that really inspired me and our team to keep on doing this, because people really use this model and you really use the World Fish Migration Day as a moment to celebrate and to take action.
Your foundation is the World Fish Migration Foundation. Do you get to travel around quite a bit, or are you mostly stuck in the Netherlands?
This year, I'm really stuck in the Netherlands because of the coronavirus. But in the years before, because our job is to connect people, and it's also important to know the stories from people and to know what they have to deal with. So I traveled a lot to different countries and to conferences to really meet these people and so that I know how I can help them with tools that we have developed, like a guidance book, for example, or other tools. And one of those tools is, for example, is also dam removal. But it's really important to meet up with people and face to face. And that's how I worked until now. But due to the coronavirus, it's a little bit different. I hope next year.
And we mentioned in the bio that you're also the initiator of Dam Removal Europe and Dam Removal Global. Are these kind of subsidiaries or related to World Fish Migration Foundation?
Yeah, it's so dam removal is a way to open up a river, to let it flow again, to let it flow freely again. And this dam removal projects have been happening for a long time now in the US, starting, I think, almost 20 years ago. In the Kennebec River, and I had the idea that why can't we talk about dam removal in Europe? What is going on? Because every time I mentioned this, say 10 years ago in Europe, in other countries, I got the feeling that I couldn't talk about it, and that the hydropower community was so powerful that the discussion was blocked, and I felt really strange about that, because there are lots of old weirs and dams that just can be removed without any problems. So I wanted to open up the discussion in Europe, and that's why we started Dam Removal Europe as a way, together with other NGOs, to open up the discussion and to make dam removal a viable option for river managers and NGOs in all the countries of Europe. And Dam Removal Global is something that is still an idea that we want to start to do this on a global level as well, because take the Kruger National Park in South Africa, they are already removing dams in Africa. You wouldn't expect that, but it's already happening. And it is really inspiring to see that the Kruger National Park is removing dams to open up the rivers for fish and to make them healthy again. So what we are doing in the last 5 years now for dam removal in Europe is that we help other organizations, NGOs, with tools and connections to really give them the knowledge to start removing dams as well in their own country. And that works really well.
But do you have an idea of how many dams have been removed in Europe since starting this initiative?
The funny thing is that when we started to talk about it, that we discovered that if you look at weirs and smaller obstacles and dams, that there were already 5,000 of them were removed, but nobody was really talking about it. So what we did, we made a map and we collected the information, and we were showing that it was already happening. So that made the discussion a little bit more easy. And since then, we started crowdfunding campaigns together with WWF, and we got in touch with a couple of organizations. And what happened is that through this crowdfunding campaign, almost over 20 dams have now been removed since then. And many more to come as well, because the crowdfunding campaign is a really powerful tool to get dams out, and also to involve people and and make people do donations. So it's a really powerful tool. And the other thing that happened is that in a couple of countries like Finland, Sweden, and Lithuania, they have changed their policies on dam removal, and that's something that we have, you know, we have been involved in. But the colleagues from these countries, they were inspired to put dam removal on the to change the policy. So that really helped. And another important thing is that through our lobby, we have arranged that in the biodiversity strategy of Europe, so from the European Commission, they're now saying that 25,000 kilometers of free-flowing rivers should be restored by removing dams. So that's a new goal in Europe, and we are quite proud that we and our partners from Dam Removal Europe, because it's a partnership, we have achieved that. So that's super cool to notice that that is going to happen.
So one of the other hosts, Julie, says that you aren't a true fish person until you have a fish tattoo. And during your travels, I've seen on the World Fish Migration Foundation Facebook page that you've gotten a fish tattoo, but it wasn't just done with a normal tattoo gun. Can you talk about that experience a little bit?
It was a painful experience, I have to say. We were on a holiday in Thailand last year, it was. And my wife and I, we always were talking about getting a tattoo. And at some point we saw a shop, and it was run by a guy from America. And we went in and we talked a little bit. I talked about my background. And then he said, I have the most perfect tattoo for you because you love rivers, you love fish. So I work with a designer who is from Thailand. And we have this original way of getting tattoos on your skin and with a big needle, and it's not with a machine but by hand. And so I thought, okay, maybe I should try. And after he did 1 centimeter, I thought, oh my God, 1 centimeter, and he has to do so much more. It was so painful, but. At the end of the day, when I saw what he made, it was really a beautiful fish. It's a barb which swims in the Mekong and in rivers in Asia and also in Thailand. And it's a fish that brings luck and happiness. And I think that's what I also feel is important, that to bring in happiness and to make people happy and proud of what they are doing. And this fish represents that.
Have you gotten any other tattoos since then?
No, I think for now it's enough. But I have thought about when I go to the USA again or to Australia that I want to have an original fish tattoo from a Native American tattoo.
Well, now the tough part of the interview is over, as we are down to the final 5 questions. And this is a group of 5 questions that we ask each of the guests to come on the show. And we start real simple with, what is your favorite fish?
Tigerfish. It's so beautiful. It's so elegant and strong, but also dangerous. And because with this big teeth, and I caught one in the Kruger National Park in the Sabi River, and it's a really powerful fish and really fast. And I like that. I like explosive things and things that are a little bit dangerous. So tigerfish represents that.
And what is your favorite memory from your career so far?
That was the fact that in 2015, we organized a conference in Groningen, in my hometown. It was the Fish Passage Conference, which normally is organized in the USA. But at some point, I proposed to organizers, can't we take this conference to Europe to show, to create a bigger community around this topic? And they said, yes, we are open to do that. And then we did it. And then we were completely overwhelmed by how many people wanted to go to that conference. So we had a room for 450 people, I think it was, but 800 people subscribed. And so we had to say to all these people, you cannot go in. That was a little bit sad, but with the 450 people that were attending, I really felt that the whole community, which I was part of, was there in Groningen, and together with our team, with our conference team, Yeah, we organized a really beautiful conference, and at the end of the week, when the conference was over, we all had to cry because we were so overwhelmed by the beauty and the experience and the positive responses from people, that they said it was the most beautiful conference we ever attended. And that's one of my most proud moments, I think, organizing that conference.
And it sounds like you're having a fun time in your current role, but what is your dream job or dream location to work in?
I think my dream job is to remove dams. I am a practical guy, and I don't want to sit too much inside. And I think the last years I've been a lot of behind my computer, but I want to be involved in projects which really open up rivers, and I want to stimulate them and be involved, and maybe even push the button sometime, just to have the feeling that you're really opening up a river. And I think that's really beautiful. And so being more into the field, a combination of making people aware and proud, and then also being involved in these restoration projects. I think that's a step that we are heading to.
And if money was not an issue, what is one project that you would like to work on?
Opening up all rivers in Kruger National Park, because I think all these animals living in this park need free flowing water and need free flowing rivers, to like the crocodiles, the lions, and so on, and especially these fish that have to move from within these rivers. And I would really love to see a free flowing, a park full of free flowing rivers, and that's a dream for me.
And finally, if there is one point or one principle that you could have programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
Fish need to migrate between the sea and the source, between the sea and the mountains, in a free-flowing river. That's the only way we can save migratory fish.
Herman, thank you for coming on the podcast today. It was a pleasure hearing about you and all of your experiences helping get the word out about migratory fishes. If people want to find out more information or get a hold of you, what would be the best way to do that?
Thank you. Yeah, I think you can direct them to fishmigration.org.
And if you would like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter at FisheriesPod, on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast, or old-fashioned email feedback@fisheriespodcast.com. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. You can download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening app, or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget, you can help support the podcast with a monthly contribution through Patreon or by rocking some awesome Fisheries Podcast logo shirts and hoodies available on Teespring. I am Nick Kramer, and thank you for listening to the 90th episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, fish need to migrate.